This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World Show. Episode number 57, to be exact. Thanks for tuning in. This is a practical gun podcast. I'm not going to get real technical with you. I want you to know something. I am not ex-law enforcement. I'm not ex-military. I'm not an ex-gunsmith or a gunsmith. I am not a combat trainer or anything like that. I'm just a private guy, just a citizen that believes strongly in my Second Amendment rights. So you're going to get a lot of personal, practical experience and practical talk. If you want to learn how to trick out your AR-15 or trick out your 1911 to make it shoot inch-and-a-half groups, I'm not your guy. There's other good podcasts out there for that. But if you want practical gun talk, you've come to the right place. I'm going to do a gun review today. Every once in a while, I do gun reviews on this show. Only if I've had a chance to either own and carry and shoot the gun or go to the range and rent it and shoot it. You're only going to get a review from me on something that I've used. Really bothers me, especially when I get on the internet and I read stuff about people making comments about guns that they've never shot. Man, I don't know about you, that drives me nuts. So in the first half of this show, I'm going to talk about the neat little SIG P238, the little 380 out there by SIG right now, which is a carbon copy of the old Colt Mustang 380. That's going to be the first half of this show. The second half, I got a different subject matter for you. I will let you in on that when I get to that subject. Get to that section of the podcast. Anyway, first of all, a couple of announcements before I jump into this interview. The Handgun World Show can be found on iTunes if you are an iTunes listener. Also, you can go straight to the website at handgunworld.com. And I'm also proud to say, as you noticed, may have noticed in the opening of this show, I am now part of the Gun Rights Radio Network. And thank you, Mark Vanderberg, for adding my show to the Gun Rights Radio Network. Thank you for those of you who have been listening to me. I am flattered. I'm honored. And you have helped me become part of the network. So, because I'm on GRRN now, obviously, as you know, I've got my own thread over there on their forum. Go to gunrightsradio.com and check out their forum. If you want to interact with me, ask me questions about the shows, questions about guns, questions about anything, go ahead. I'll give you straightforward answers the best that I can. So check me out over there. Also, don't forget about my YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/user/handgunworldshow. And that's it. That's enough of the announcements. I keep this short and sweet. I don't want it to be a real commercial show. Let's talk about this little SIG 238. I bought one, I told you, because I wanted a pocket gun, another pocket gun. So my two pocket guns are the Carr P380 and the SIG P238. I actually shot quite a few rounds through both of these, but I'm going to focus mainly on the SIG P238. First of all, the looks of the gun, fantastic. You know, the classic 1911 looks. I like it. Some people do, some don't. I do. I have the black one, the all-black with rosewood grips. SIG calls it their nitron finish. As you know, out of the box, these things come with 3-dot tritium night sights. They come with real sights, which is pretty cool for a pocket gun. Now, there are some definite negatives of this gun that I'm going to talk about. You're going to get the unvarnished truth from me. I ran 200 rounds of Full Metal Jacket through this thing today and 50 rounds of hollow point defensive ammo. So I'm a fourth of the way to my 1,000-round trigger job on this gun already. So I bought this new, got a good price on it. This is the first time I've had a chance to shoot this gun. The controls are in great places. It's very easy to reach the thumb safety, as it is with most 1911 style guns. It's very easy to reach the slide release. The magazine ejection button disconnect button is fantastic. So the controls, just fine. Ergonomically, superior gun. I would say ergonomically, out of all the pocket 380s out there, this is by far the best. It is a little heavier than most, but weight, this kind of weight doesn't bother me too much. 14, 15 ounces, I think, is what SIG says on their website. Not a problem for me. This is a gun primarily that I'm going to pocket carry as a backup gun. These little mouse guns are my backup guns. They're not my primary concealed carry guns. So no problem with the looks, the ergonomics, the weight, styling, stuff like that. Let's talk about shooting it. I showed up at the range with 100 rounds of CCI Blazer Brass 380. And let's see, I had 50 rounds of the Monarch Brass 380 that I buy at Academy Sports and Outdoors here in North Texas. And then I showed up with a box of Corban DPX hollow points and a box of Remington Golden Saber hollow points. So that's 150, 175 plus 20. I guess it's 195 rounds that I ran through initially. Gotta tell you, the first 100 rounds, I was worried. I had 5 failures to eject. I had a problem with this thing. The last round, it would not extract the round properly, and when the slide went back into battery, it was taking that spent case and it was jamming it back into the chamber and it was chewing up the brass. So I was getting kind of worried. Now I had a couple of stovepipes and 6 or 7 malfunctions in the first 100 rounds, and I thought to myself, ugh, what did I do? I thought, wow, what an expensive mistake here. But something said, Bob, be patient. Be patient. You know, guns need a break in. Got to get used to how to shoot guns and things like that. So I was. I remained patient, but I was worried. Then I put in the Corban DPX and fired all 20 rounds of that box. Only had one problem with it. One failure to extract or eject. And I thought, well, okay, I'm getting better here. Shot 120 rounds through it, and I'm getting better. In terms of accuracy, folks, I was all over the place at first. Now, these guns are supposed to be highly, highly accurate. Well, it was. By the time I got done with my shooting session, it was highly accurate. And I'll get to that in a minute, too. Trigger's a little bit stiff, I have to say, for a single-action trigger. But I'm sure that once I've given it my 1,000-round trigger job, as I always say, I'll be a better shot on the 1,000th round than I was on the first round. No doubt about it. And it started to loosen up the more I shot it. So anyway, the failure rate started to go down the more I shot it. And I'm thinking to myself, well, maybe this is like all other guns. It needs a break-in period. Either that or I had some crappy ammo. So then I start shooting the Remington Golden Sabers, 102 grain Remington Golden Sabers, all 25 rounds, not a hitch. Fed them all just perfectly. And I'm thinking, maybe I do have an ammo problem here with this gun, and maybe it's not the gun, or maybe it's a combination of the ammo and the break-in period. So I'm all out of ammo at this point. I've got nothing left. So I've run 150 rounds of Full Metal Jacket. Let's see, 2 boxes of Blazer Brass. I think I forgot. Did I mention that I shot the 50 rounds of Monarch? Yeah, I think I mentioned that. Anyway, so I'm all out of ammo here, close to 200 rounds through the gun. And because it was getting better, I decided to go ahead and splurge, and I bought some more ammo at the range, some of that expensive, overpriced stuff. But I bought a box of 50 Independence FMJ 380, and sure enough, the gun fired all 50 flawlessly. No jams, no stovepipes, nothing. So let's see, that made it a total of 245 rounds, and I guess I fired pretty close to 300 rounds from this gun, I guess, now that I think about this and add this all up. Just now starting to put all this together while I'm doing this podcast here. So that ran fine, and I went and bought another box of Golden Sabers. I'll tell you what, for 380, I'm starting to change my mind about the Corban DPX. Corban DPX, I love it in my 9mm Glocks, no problem. I love this Golden Saber 102 grain 380 ammo. One more box of 25 Remington Golden Sabers, no problem. So I think I've determined that either it was crappy ammo or the gun needed to be broken in or a little bit of both. The jury's still out on the reliability. As you know with me, folks, reliability is king. I gotta have reliable guns. I have zero tolerance for malfunctioning guns. You know, I mean, for a self-defense gun, come on. Can't have a malfunction. It could cost you your life. I got zero tolerance for it. Sorry. And I'm thinking to myself, geez, do I need to send this gun back to SIG? But I remained patient, and as I mentioned to you, the more I shot this gun, either I got the feel of it better, Or when I used better quality ammo, you know, these 1911s, they can be ammo sensitive anyway. I guess I'm kind of spoiled with Glocks. You know, I'm spoiled with the supreme functionality and reliability of Glocks. They just eat anything. Well, then I decided to pull out my car P380. So, back to the front counter again, bought another box of the Independence 380 ammo, ran that through my car P380, not a single malfunction. I think I've got about 750, close to 800 rounds through my P380, and that thing has had no malfunctions in the last 300 rounds or so. What they say about these little high-quality guns about needing a break-in period, it's true. I know some of you might disagree with me on that. I've read some internet banter where people say, oh, guns shouldn't need a break-in period. Expensive guns, if you pay a lot of money for some, it shouldn't need a break-in period. Let me tell you how I feel about that, folks. I think break-in periods are a good thing. You know why? Because I think the shooter needs a break-in period. Seriously. I mean, not just the gun. You, the shooter, you need a break-in period, especially when you get a new gun. New guns have different feels. They're brand new. They need to be broken in and so forth. Hey, get used to your gun. You know, folks, I'm a big fan of the 1,000-round trigger job anyway, so, you know, I'm going to reserve judgment on this thing till I've run at least 500 or 600 rounds. If I'm still having problems after 500 or 600 rounds, it's going back to SIG. But if it remains flawless like the last couple boxes of ammo, then I've got a winner. Accuracy, once I settled down, once I got used to it, accuracy is just fine. Nice single action trigger. Definitely a better trigger than my car P380. But I tell you what, that little car P380 is sweet trigger, especially after it's been broken in now with several hundred rounds through it. So what I have to say is I've got two absolutely good pocket guns here. Very accurate for my needs, and they are backup guns. I do need supreme reliability in my backup guns as well, but the main carry gun is where I look for the absolute most reliability, and of course, just can't beat my Glocks. I'm sorry to all of you 1911 fans out there, but I tell you what... when the stink hits the fan, I want reliability more than anything else. So if you're thinking about getting one of these little SIG P238s, be patient when you get it. I've read some internet posts that they've worked fantastic straight out of the box. I've heard some people say that they didn't work real well at first, but needed a break-in period and so forth, and then they worked fine. That's probably me. I did, like everybody is supposed to do. I didn't just pull this out of the box after I bought it and go to the range and shoot it. I took it home, and I field-stripped it, and I gave it a really, really thorough cleaning, and I gave it very good lubrication and did what I was supposed to do. Another negative I'll say about this gun is the magazines are ridiculously expensive. Now, I've heard that I can use the Colt 380 magazines in it, but, you know, good luck finding those. And they're probably just as much as the SIG mags. So the downside, expensive magazines, but you know what? I really don't pay too much attention to cost anymore. If I can afford the gun, I can afford the gun. And if I can't afford the gun, I don't buy it until I can afford it. My attitude, folks, is how much is your life worth? I'm not going to complain too much about an extra $10 in magazines if they work. And if the gun works. And if I'm satisfied with it, and I'm accurate with it, and I practice with it, you know... Practicing with 380 ammo is expensive. It's not cheap. By the way, folks, I don't know if you noticed this or not, but 380 ammo is becoming more readily available now. It's hitting the shelves again in the ammo stores. I'm glad to see that. But anyway, I put a high price tag on my life. And so therefore, I don't mind a high price tag on a good gun. Again, if I can't afford it, I just wait until I can. And I just shoot and carry what I have until I can afford it. So... that's pretty much my unvarnished review of the SIG P238. For you 1911 fans, you're going to love this gun once you get it running right. Sure is nice to have night sights out of the box on these things, too. Real sights. You know, dovetail front sight. These are real sights. They're not sights that are machined into the slide like the Ruger LCP and the Kel-Tec. I hate that. You know, that's another reason why I bought the car P380. Because it's got real sights. And there are big dot sights available now for the car P380. And these SIG sights are good. Now, I was only practicing at about 7 yards, which is typical handgun distance, 7 yards or less. I didn't practice. The next range trip, I'll be practicing at 10, 15, 20 yards. I want to see what I can do with this gun. I did notice that the sights are kind of blocky, and so that might make it a little bit different, a little bit difficult to do 20-yard shots with it, plus the short sight radius. You know, I'm not going to expect a whole lot of 20 yards. I'll tell you what, though. I would feel a lot more confident with this SIG 238 or my Car P380 at 20 yards than I would an LCP or a Kel-Tec. I've read some stories about Kel-Tecs doing real well at 25 yards, but I don't know about that. I don't know how much of that I really believe. You know, that Internet Commando stuff, I don't know. Some of that stuff just seems a little far-fetched to me. All right, that pretty much concludes the first half of this podcast. I got some more info for you. Let's take a little bit of a break. I'll be back on with the second half of this show. But I wanted to give you my honest opinion, real-life example of the SIG P238. Let's listen to a little bit of music here, about a minute's worth of tunes, and then I'll be back on with the second half.
Looking for surf, sun and skyrocketing violent crime? Then come to the land down under, Australia. We've got gun control. Now you can enjoy an exciting vacation of death and violence like no other. We've got it all in Australia. Murder, armed robbery, even increased violent crime against the elderly. So be sure and bring the grandparents. Australia's a criminal's paradise. After just 1 year of outlawing semi-automatic firearms, armed robberies are up 44%. In the state of Victoria alone, homicide with a firearm is up an amazing 300%. Looks like the criminals forgot to turn in their guns. So, come to the land down under and see what gun control is really all about. Australia, a great place to die.
Okay, Bob Main from the Handgun World Show back here with you for segment number 2 of this episode. I want to cover a little bit of listener feedback. I want to try to get this out of the way every time that you guys send me comments. And folks, the comments have been great. Thank you. Excellent show suggestions. This is your show, not mine. I want to cover these as they come in, because if I don't, I'm going to forget it. I know me in my old age. So let's get right to the listener feedback. The first one I want to cover is a listener sent me a message saying, "Hey, Bob," he says, "I was listening to the podcast today, and I, too, am a Texas resident, and we don't have open carry anyhow, but you made a comment about how you need more convincing before being a convert. He's talking about me being a convert to open carry. I did make a comment in a recent show saying I wasn't quite yet convinced. So he continues to write. He says, "I wish we had open carry for one reason. When I conceal my firearm, there are times that I need to reach something on a high shelf, bend over to change a tire, or several other situations, and then I have to be very aware of showing my firearm by mistake." And he goes on to make the point that if open carry was legal in Texas, that would not be a problem. He wouldn't have to worry about his firearm accidentally showing or printing. That is not a bad point. I've heard that before, and I'd just like to respond by saying that is one good benefit of open carry. The only thing that makes me nervous, folks, about open carry, you know, is all the man with a gun calls that are going to take place. And all it's going to take is one bozo to screw it up. All it's going to take is somebody to do something stupid And all of a sudden, all the gun haters are going to jump on top of that. Now, I very much respect the right of anybody to not carry a gun as well. I said that on the show very, very many times, that if you don't want to carry a gun, that's fine. You know, I'm not going to be one of those podcasters that browbeats people just because they don't believe in carrying. And some people don't. Some people own guns, they just don't want to carry them. Once open carry, you know, some of you who live in open carry states, you know, Arizona, Montana, so forth, places where you can open carry, send me feedback. Get on the Gun Rights Radio Network forum and send me feedback if you want. But I just think that we're opening ourselves up to a lot more people who don't understand firearms. And those of us who open carry may get kind of annoyed by all the calls that we're going to get, the people calling the police screaming, "Oh my God, I've been walking my 3-year-old and he saw a man walking down the street with a gun. Come help, you know, come do something about this." That's going to happen, folks. You know, again, set me straight if I'm all full of baloney on this. It's the only thing that makes me nervous. But, sir, your point about not having to worry about your gun showing when you're reaching for something, that's a good one. That's a good one. I'm starting to get convinced. Keep them coming. Keep the comments coming about the open carry issue, folks. All right. Another listener just recently wrote me, and he said, "Bob, keep up the good work. I'm working my way through your past shows. What I like best is that you don't complain about handguns you don't like. Any handgun someone likes and shoots well and will carry it consistently is a good one, if it's reliable, of course. That's the only caveat." He says, "I get sick of people complaining incessantly about a certain type of handgun, like the Glock versus XD arguments." He says, "I don't like Glocks because of the grip angle, the fatness of the grip, and the looks, and I would never own one, but they are very, very good pistols." Here's my comment on that, folks. Sir, thank you. You're right. You're right. You know, if I start to complain too much about people who don't own Glocks, somebody just slap me, all right? Because that's not right. If you've listened to enough of my shows, you know that I'm a big Glock fan. But this man's right. Anything that you can shoot effectively and that you're willing to carry all the time. My preference, and I've told you many times, the reason I like Glock pistols is because they just flat out work. All right? I mean, you run over them with a truck and they just continue to flat out work. Doesn't mean that XDs don't. It doesn't mean the Smith & Wesson M&Ps don't work. Fine guns. It's just that, you know, I like supreme reliability, and I've still yet to find a semi-automatic gun that has as few malfunctions as a Glock. And when the stink hits the fan, folks, when it gets ugly, I want the darn thing to go bang. Now, not saying that there aren't 1911s that will do that. So very, very good point. All gun owners are welcome, obviously, and I'm not going to chastise anybody that doesn't own something that I don't particularly care for. Matter of fact, I've done some reviews on guns on this podcast that I don't care for, but I did my honest, objective review on them. The review I just did in the first half of this show on the SIG P238. Love the gun. Glad I bought it. You know, not my favorite handgun, but it was one of those I just had to have. I just had to buy. I had to check it out. It's a keeper. Like I said, I'm going to have some patience with it. But it's definitely something I'm going to hang on to. Okay, next comment I want to share with you. One listener writes me. He says, "I was thinking about a story in a previous episode that you talked about." And he says, I don't remember the episode number. He said the story was about a person who was carjacked and pulled his gun on the carjacker. He says, "This is an interesting topic for me because I think that a lot of people think that the action they should take is to pull their gun in this situation, which is a carjacker is at your car and has a gun in your face. Since the carjacker's gun is already drawn, he has the obvious advantage. Besides, how many of us have our guns in a place in the car where we could easily draw them like we could if we were out of the car and standing? But even in this case, when someone has a gun drawn on you and yours is still in the holster, the odds are very much in the attacker's favor." Okay. I got a quick comment I want to make on that, and then I actually have a pretty good audio soundbite that I want to share with you. This person makes good points, and I agree with most of them. I carry my gun while I'm driving between the console and the passenger's seat, and I have a holster that I picked up, just a cheap nylon holster I picked up at a gun show, but it's got some rough edges on the outside of it, and it works great. And I stick my gun in that holster. I stick my, right now, actually, as I'm driving right now, my Glock 19 is between the seat, between the passenger seat, not the driver's seat, between the passenger seat and the console inside of this holster. Then I just drop a baseball cap over the grip of the gun that's exposed. Therefore, it's technically concealed. By law, that's a concealed handgun. Now, all I've got to do is just flip the cap off and grab the grip of my gun. The holster stays where it's supposed to be, and I can take care of business the way that I need to take care of business. I can do that extremely fast, folks. I have practiced it. With an unloaded gun, I have practiced it many, many, many times. It's just like drawing a pistol from a holster, the quicker you can be. Now, does a carjacker sticking a gun in your face have the advantage? Sure he does. It's not going to be the first thing I do is yank my gun out of that holster between the seat and the console. It's not going to be the first thing I'm going to do. I'm going to try everything I can. There's numerous ways to defuse the situation. In fact, this question has brought up a good point. I think I might do a show on carjackings coming up. Because there's a resource I've been talking to a lot about that very subject. But I'll try to defuse the situation any way I can before drawing and firing. Now, when I get out of the car, you know where that gun goes? It goes in my holster and it goes with me. So the only gun that I have between the console and the seat of my vehicle, I have a Ford Taurus as my company car. The only gun that's there is the one that's going to go in my holster, in my belt when I leave the car. I'm not a big fan of leaving a loaded pistol in your glove box or a loaded pistol anywhere in your car unless it's locked up in a safe. Now, there's a lot of good gun safes. There's one, I think Gun Vault actually makes a version of their safes. You know, I'm a big fan of Gun Vault. I think they make one that has a security cable that you can bolt to the seat of your vehicle, I think, or bolt it to your vehicle so that a thief can't break in and steal the whole safe and the gun with it. That's a good viable option. If you need to have a place, if you're not going to take your gun where you're going, then that's where you need to put it, okay? You might want to think about that. What I do if I'm at a place where I can't carry, like if I'm going to the post office or something like that, or if I'm going into a prohibited place to carry my pistol, then I unload the stupid thing, and I do go ahead and lock it up in my glove box, all right? But it's unloaded. I take all ammunition out of it. I take the magazine with me. All right, it's not legal for me to, or excuse me, it's not illegal for me to go around with a loaded magazine. It might be illegal in some places to go around, walk around with a loaded handgun, but it's not illegal to go around with a magazine and a holster. Nothing against the law there. I know that may sound like a lot of trouble, but I don't go to a lot of places where I can't carry my pistol. But if I do, that's my procedure. But getting back to carjackings. I'm going to save the rest of my comments for an audio soundbite, a really cool one that I want to share with you. So stay tuned. A little bit later in the show, I'm going to get back to that subject. All right, now, one more comment I want to address, and this is actually going to lead me into the next primary subject of this podcast. One listener emails me and asks me about performance anxiety. In other words, shooting in front of people. And he talked about, it's a lengthy email, I'm not going to cover the whole thing, but he mentioned a scenario where shooters in competition especially get nervous. They get nervous about shooting in front of somebody else, shooting in front of their peers when everybody's watching. Probably they're flubbing up a lot and they're doing a lot of stupid stuff. And I've been there, I know exactly how that feels. So, you know, I want to address some of that. As many of you know, I love competition shooting. I love IDPA and I love USPSA. As I've mentioned many times, it's not combat training, but it's excellent fundamentals on shooting. And I've faced some pretty good shooters around here. At the local IDPA club that I shoot, there's some very, very good shooters. And of course, most of the time, they're beating me. And I've also been beaten by some pretty bad shooters. I've even been beaten on some stages by some new shooters doing it for the first time. And as a matter of fact, just recently in the man-on-man steel plate match that I shot, I got beat by a couple of times by a shooter that I know wasn't as good at me. It happens. It just happens. It's easy to freak out. And here's my theory on this. I think what happens is a phenomenon called buck fever. And those of you who are hunters, and especially deer hunters, you know what I mean. You know what buck fever means. You know, people do all sorts of stupid stuff when they see the big buck that they can shoot that's 30 or 40 yards away. Okay, some of those big bucks can drive a real intelligent man into a state of idiotic convulsion. And, you know, you might have all heard the story of the deer hunter who all of a sudden starts working his slide, and all of a sudden he's emptied his gun, all of his ammunition's out on the ground, he's so damn nervous, and then he points his empty gun at the deer and pulls the trigger. So let me give a few tips here to any of you that might suffer from some performance anxiety. Maybe if even if you're a hunter, this might help a little bit too. But mainly what I'm going to talk here about is shooting under pressure. And see, again, folks, this is why I like the competition sports. Because the competition sports and any kind of combat training course that you can take from Tactical Response or Suarez International or Front Sight or any of the good courses out there that you can take, when they make you shoot under pressure, when you're against the clock or you have somebody shooting back at you with airsoft guns, stuff like that, you know, that's as close to real life as you can get. And a few of the comments I want to say about staying your cool is, first of all, I think a person's temperament has a great deal to do with his or her ability to handle that pressure. Okay? I mean, if this person is so jittery that they're the kind of person that's going to leap 6 feet in the air, you know, when a cat steps on a rug behind him, then they probably are not going to make a really super good competition pistol shooter. There's a chance they could overcome that, but it's not likely. All right. Now you might be thinking, well, what about old Sure Shot Sam that I run into all the time at the range? You know, he doesn't have a nerve in his body, man. Sure Shot Sam, this guy's got ice water for blood. He's got tunnel vision. He concentrates like a Zen master. Okay. So how can I beat old Sure Shot Sam? Well, the truth is, the Sam can shoot well enough when he's a little bit unglued to beat most of us, even on our best day. Okay? And guys like Sure Shot Sam, they call up the powers of their concentration right before they get ready to fire a string in competition. Now, in real life, if you're attacked, then Sure Shot Sam might not. Now, who knows? It depends on how much he's practiced. He might be able to call upon his powers of concentration that he's practiced thousands and thousands of times in competition, or he might not. And even old Sure Shot's going to have a couple of flyers when he's shooting at the target every once in a while. Usually those flyers have come when the stress has taken its toll on him. Okay, that buck that gave him buck fever, that buck just cost him a new national record or a new state record. And he's furious with himself for being so spineless under pressure. Every once in a while, that happens to old Sure Shot. Okay, but you and I, we look at his score and we go, wow, man, look at that. Not a nerve in this guy's body. How does he do it? Here's a few tips I want to share with you. First of all, the first thing to remember, unless somebody kept score at a match, we would never know who won. Now, you've heard me say before, in real life, self-defense shooting, the only winner is the one that stays alive, plain and simple. So my advice, first of all, in a competition match, is to ignore score and don't always worry about who's winning. Forget about it. Okay? When you finish a match, check your scorecard, make sure that every individual shot has been recorded correctly and that the totals are correct, then sign your card, turn it in, and forget about it. Just blow it off. One of the surest ways to put the monkey on your back is to walk up to the line knowing that you need a certain score in order to win and to set some record or whatever, and to beat old Sammy Sure Shot, and for the first time in your life, or to do anything else that you want to do. And what's going to happen is that's one of the best ways to put the monkey on your back, and you're going to fail. If it was easy to go to a doctor, and the doctor could feed us a pill which would calm that performance anxiety, we'd all be doing it. But I wouldn't suggest going to the doctor and asking him to give you a chill pill for that. So just blow it off, folks. You know, don't worry about score. If you're new to shooting, forget about the people that are around you, folks. And that leads me to the second point I want to make. Always remember, there was a day when those people were new shooters, too. And chances are they felt just as nervous as you did, and there's nothing really too much that you can do about it. You're just going to have to show up a lot and do it a lot to get over the fear of it. Okay? For 7 years, folks, I made my living as a public speaker. Let me take a little bit of a departure here from guns for a minute. I made my living as a public speaker for 7 straight years. I did 3 speeches a day, averaging about 45 minutes in length, 5 days a week. I was terrified. You know, public speaking is one of the most terrifying things that almost anybody can do. And of course, I guess maybe by this person's email, public shooting is terrifying as well. I got over it just because I kept at it. I said to myself, I'm going to get good at this and I'm going to conquer the fear. And there's an old saying, do what you fear the most and you control fear. I'll say that again. Do what you fear the most and you control fear. My old mentor taught me that. I know it sounds simple, sounds very basic, but it's so true. Okay, the next tip I want to share, experienced shooters. I'm speaking to you for a minute. Those of you who are experienced, you're at a match, somebody's new, they got the shakes, they're nervous, performance anxiety has set in, shooter anxiety has set in. You know what I want you to do? Encourage them. All right, do whatever you have to do to go up to that shooter and say, you know what? It's going to be fine. It's cool. You know, we're not all watching. Don't worry about your score. Just hang in there. Encourage the new shooters that appear to be nervous. And do it, obviously, before they step up to the line. You know, explain to them that no one really cares how well that they do. Explain that you only care that they shoot the stage and the match safely and have fun. And some of you who are tactical instructors, you've probably experienced this, right? You've probably had a new shooter show up, and you can tell that they're terrified. Try to calm them in advance, okay? The next tip I want to share on that, to those of you who do suffer from performance anxiety, try to visualize the stage in advance. In fact, try this. I did this a couple times, and it really made a big difference. When I knew there was about three or four shooters ahead of me, I took a stopwatch to the match. Take one with you. Hold it in your left hand. If you're a right-hand shooter, hold it in your left hand and go through the stage in your mind. So when somebody else is up there shooting ahead of you, when the buzzer goes off, go ahead and hit the button on your stopwatch while he's shooting. And try to picture everything exactly as you want it to happen. And watch the shooter that's three or four shooters ahead of you. And picture it exactly as you want it to happen. Okay? Now, compare how your visualization, compare that with what the person who's shooting ahead of you is actually doing. And the key here is you're actually competing against yourself. You're not competing against other people. All right? And while you're visualizing this, okay, pay particular attention to your rhythm as you're going along. Okay, by paying attention to your rhythm while you're visualizing yourself shooting that stage and doing this in your mind, you're going to start the match and you're going to start that stage with a lot more confidence. All right, because you're going to know how long it takes, first of all, or you're going to have approximate gauge as to how long it's going to take. And hopefully you're visualizing yourself shooting all zeros or shooting all A's, whatever sport you're competing in. And confidence and rhythm is so important. It's so important. And the other thing, I don't know if you thought about this or not, but the other thing that visualization does, it keeps your mind busy. Okay? It takes the worry away. You're a lot less likely to worry about your score because you're concentrating and you're visualizing, and you got your stopwatch out, and you're picturing yourself going through this whole stage. Keep your mind off of your score. Don't focus on that. Okay, and the last tip that I want to share with you is dedicate your first 10 matches to slowing down, getting over the fear of someone watching you. All right, remember, when you shoot a stage, it's probably only 10 to 20 seconds on the average. All right, and let me speak to some of you who do get real nervous. Okay, let me tell you another little secret. All right, because I've been doing this for a while, not quite as long as some of the listeners, but I've been doing this long enough. Here's the primary point I want to drive home right now about shooters' anxiety, especially in competition shooting. Not everyone is watching you. All right, let me say that again. Not everybody is behind you watching what you're doing. Other shooters are back there messing around with their magazines and they're loading magazines and they're trying to find ammo and they're talking with each other and they're laughing and they're checking out each other's holsters and they're looking at each other's guns and chatting about modifications that they made on their gun and springs that they changed and sights that they tuned and all kinds of stuff. Trust me, I'm one of those guys back there. I rarely pay attention to the person that's shooting. Now, maybe that's a detriment. Maybe I need to pay more attention to the other people that are shooting. You know, when I find out that I'm on deck, or when I find out that I'm on, that I'm in the hole, and you know, I'm the third guy that's going to shoot next, well, then I start to pay attention. But I find myself laughing and talking with other shooters when I'm behind that firing line all the time. Now, I do this to keep myself loose. I love humor. All right, I like to joke around. Anybody that knows, anybody that's shot a match with me, they know. I like to crack jokes while I'm out there. You know, I mean, folks, I'm out there to have fun. I'm not out there to get all serious and everything. You know, so many people take this stuff so seriously. That's okay. But if you take it so seriously to where it psychs you out and you get so competitive that you can't perform well, you might want to think about loosening up, laughing a little more. Okay? Nothing like a little humor to calm you down. Trust me on that. And if you'll work hard on ideas such as what I just talked to you about, concentrating on the ones that seem to help you, you're going to find that you're going to gradually begin to control that pressure on you a lot better. And it goes without saying, however, that there's no amount of mental power can make you shoot any better than you already know how to shoot. You know, there's an old saying that practice makes perfect. Well, be careful with that. My mentor taught me that perfect practice makes perfect. It's easy to practice something the wrong way. And if you have a bad habit about your shooting skills, or if you're doing something, you're not getting the desired results that you want, change. Change your practice routine. Okay? Change your practice routine so that it gets the desired results that you want, and the ability, folks, that you can muster to withstand the pressure of a competition shoot, it will also help you with the pressure of a real self-defense situation. I'm a firm believer in that, and it isn't going to be long, folks, when you learn to master and overcome that fear that one of these days some new shooters back there that are paying attention are going to look at you and look at your scores and start saying, wow, look at that, there's not a nerve in that guy's body. But you know better, because you, just like me, you were that nervous person standing on the firing line for the first time. Okay? Hope that helps. That's kind of the long answer to that, but that was an excellent question, such a good question, that I wanted to cover that and kind of put into my own words some of the things that have helped me relax out there. I'm not saying I don't get nervous, and I can guarantee you one thing, folks. This is for darn sure. If I ever find myself in a self-defense situation, and I've said it 1,000 times and I'll say it again, I hope that day never comes. But if I find myself in that situation, I'm going to be nervous. I am. And I'm probably going to have to summon a few of my relaxation skills. And I'm going to have to summon them up within probably about a quarter of a second to try to calm myself down so that I can think clearly. And that's not easy to do. And I've heard it said many times, and then I'm going to go ahead and close this show with this. I've heard many people say, you're only half as good as you are at the range in a real-life situation. I like to reduce that. You know, I like to think I'm probably only going to be a third as good as I am at the range in a self-defense situation. Okay, now I know I said I'd cover some things about carjackings, but I'm kind of out of time. I don't want this podcast to drag on too long. So I will cover that in the next episode. Actually, I'm probably going to go ahead and post another one in a few days. And so with that, I want to thank you for listening to episode number 57 of the Handgun World Show. My name is Bob Main. And why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Catch you next time. Bye-bye.